103.9 FM, WOZO Radio, Knoxville.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Girl, loved the mess. I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus, I love my uniform. So did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age. Things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the big taboo of letting go of God.
Letting go of God. Hello, welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Sunday, July 28th. And if it's not, then you're listening to a rebroadcast of the show and should not try to call in. I'm Dotter Five, and as usual, we have Wombat on the phone with us. Hello, Wombat.
It's the Wombat! I'm ready to go. It's the weekend, and I feel happy. I feel really happy.
It's been beautiful weather, too, for
the
weekend.
It has been, and I feel really, really good.
Fanny back with us today. Hello, Fanny.
How are you doing, guys? Thank you very much for inviting me again.
Yeah. Oh,
happy to have you.
Absolutely.
She's calling in from Canada. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, God, holy book, and superstitions. Also, if you get the feeling like you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and we'll be telling you about them right after the mid-show breaks. Also, did you know that there's a call-in atheist TV show broadcasting here in Knoxville and has been for over 9 years? Did you know that, Wombat?
I know, but it's a little too violent for family audiences. I feel like, overall, it has really inspired acting. And I'm tired of, like, seeing superhero movies, too. But I never really watched any special shows on Amazon.
No,
but
The
Boys
no.
is really, really good. I'd recommend it. But
no.
it's not for families. Keep your kids away.
It's
a lot of no-no words.
It's a regular call-in talk radio show. TV
it's
show.
It's pretty
have
colorful.
Two
I don't
guys
know about
sitting
you.
In front of the cameras and answering phone calls and talking about atheism and religion. So one of these days you'll find the right chapter or channel to watch it on, and we can give you that information after the mid-show break as well. Also, in spite of what Miss Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program and generally on this station as they're in rotation. Today's topic is the trauma of leaving religion.
Ooh.
And how it may affect people. And meaning you, if you decide to leave your religion because you no longer believe.
Sure.
So did you face any trauma when you left religion there, Wombat?
I mean, I have a weird parallel because I have a new job here in Tennessee. And I was working in Kentucky. And I liked the job that I was up there. But there were a lot of people that were getting promoted who weren't qualified to be promoted. And it made the conditions that we were working in not as safe. Because we were working with, like, these really dangerous chemicals. And as a result, like, when you had people who, like, took corners or didn't really care about, like, you know, the safety of the people who are handling these things, it made everyone super nervous. And as a result, it was like, maybe I should find a different place to work because I don't like the environment that's here. And it was just a couple of people, too, that can make the whole place feel like it's not a safe place to be. So I ended up moving to a better place down here. Got a really, really nice promotion in the whole, like, capacity of, like, the new responsibilities that I have. But I still think, like, I still wake up at night and I'm like, man, I'm glad I don't work in that old place that I was at. Because who knew what would have happened if I was still there? It's made me feel like, you know, any day I could walk home and not.
Yeah, but
really...
how did religion and leaving religion impact your feeling of security on your job?
Well, I'm coming to that.
You're getting there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm thinking is like, I still have, even though I'm in a completely different state, even though I have a completely different job and things are much nicer here, I still have reservations and resentment and feelings of like that I can't pin down on anything like physical or permanent. Of like this traumatic experience I had at my last place of employment. And it's one of those things where it's like, hey, things are good now, just get over it. But it's like, you can't get over it. And I feel like there are other things that lead to similar traumatic experiences, particularly for atheists, people who don't believe, because they may come from a position of like, hey, I did believe in a God, now I don't. But that transition isn't nearly as smooth as just moving to a different state. And that's what... And that's what I wanted to bring up in these conversations today. Like, what were our personal paths out? And I would say, like, feelings of trauma or things that are associated with trauma that we have as we've left.
Yeah.
Do you have any specific situation that you can share with us? Like,
sure.
That brought you to have that feeling? Yeah. To be unsafe in that environment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for the job specifically or for like...
Yeah, for the old job, the one that you believe that was the one that implied on you like this type of trauma that you're still carrying around.
Well, unfortunately, it was government work, so I can't get too explicit. But I would say like it came to the point where I realized that the rules that they were coming up with for worker safety was more about reducing their liability and less about actually keeping us safe. When I realized that was the case, I was like, well, this is really dangerous stuff. Shouldn't we have this and this and this? It's like, we don't need to buy that. You just have to follow these 10 rules. I'm like, these 10 rules don't apply to anything that we do in this laboratory. And it's like, well, we don't care. It's just do it. And we're just like, ooh, I hate that. I don't like, you know, just, you know, unequivocal statements of authority.
Uh-huh.
And so, and you get that even in religion too. Like sometimes you just say, hey, why do I have to follow this rules? Well, God says so. And you're just like, this doesn't make any sense. And even you were telling me that, like, from last week. You're like, you get told this is the way how things are and don't question them. But that doesn't mean that you don't question them. It just means that you now question them internally rather than, you know, explicitly.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know about some lingering things. So for me, I have resentment with specifically Christianity because my family... we all were in the same church. We all went to the same place, my sister and my mother and even my dad. But then over a period of time now, like, for example, right now, my mom's a Jehovah's Witness. My sister's probably Baptist or spiritual. Mm-hmm. I'm an atheist and my dad's dead. So we got a whole weird gamut of different things going on. But I mean, it's a shame that I feel like from my position, I'm not saying like there's no God. I'm just saying like, hey, there's not enough evidence for me to support belief in one. I think I have the intellectually honest position of just saying I don't know, and I'm willing to believe once I have the evidence. Until then, I don't want to believe, or I can't believe.
I can't believe, yeah.
And
not a choice.
And that's not my mom's position, and I love my mom to death, and that's not my sister's position, and she has just as little clue of whether or not there's a God as I do. But she doesn't want to get out of the religious fold because she's comfortable there. And I can't tell you how...
Yeah.
How
and their friends are there.
Yeah.
I have had like conversations with friends that are very religious and to the point of then to admit, you know, in this very particular conversation, I would not even expose these people, but for them to like talk to me and my husband, and in the end, they totally like, okay, I need the religious as a clutcher for my life, for my, you know, for my daily, whatever, you know, work and living with
and interacting with other people.
So, I wanted to pull back just a little bit on the subject before on the work environment because I think I could expose a little bit on my experience on that, like to suffer the prejudice of being an atheist in a work environment where people push religion. In fact, they share this into the in the groups, you know, like they share like religious memes in the, in the professional groups. And I have encountered myself in this situation, mainly in this social media groups like WhatsApp and other groups that people made groups in about work, and they keep sharing those memes. And I was the one that like would sometimes bring up like how can we could bring it this group back to be just work related and not do any advertisement in any religious side, you know. And they get really offended with me bringing this up and kicking me out. Yeah, I have been kicked out of like my groups of university, for example, my college.
For being an atheist.
Yes.
Man, where
yeah, I'm out of this group.
Is it in Canada there?
No, I study in Brazil, and my classmates kicked me out. I think it was like maybe a year or so ago.
Wow.
Yeah, in one of the me bringing up like a Eastern or Christmas or no, those holidays that they love Jesus memes.
Yeah.
I brought my thoughts and they attacked me, and we had an argument. We argued for a while, for days, until it deteriorated to personal offense, you know, toward me, and then kicking me out.
Insults,
It happened the same with, but then these people, I did not have like any more personal interaction, you know, like I don't actually see anybody from my college classmates. But in the other case, I was into this pre-hospital emergency ambulance work. It's the SAMU. We have SAMU in Brazil. Uh-huh. And people that work in relate to emergency and healthcare, they most of people are religious, because in Brazil, most of people are religious in general. No?
Yeah, I would have been surprised if had it been in Canada, but I can understand it in Brazil.
Yeah, and yes, I have been confronted, you know, like personally at work by colleagues telling me like, I can't swear. So I was like, go home with your atheism and, you know, and other bad things, and kicking me out of groups and saying bad things, saying like, oh yeah, atheists have no morals, have no, like people that have no gods in their hearts are bad people.
Sure.
And all these statements. So it's I can't imagine, like I can't imagine on the level of feeling physically unsafe.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I know what is the conflict of being pushed away by your colleagues or your classmates.
The people you're supposed to be able to trust.
Because of that, yeah.
Yeah. And those feelings, like even after you're in a completely different country, like those feelings of hurt still exist, like they're still in you, and it's like this experience of like, man, that situation sucked, but I'm in a better place now, but I still feel, you know, raw over this experience that I had in the past. And
I think we cannot really protect ourselves from that feeling, because we're talking about everybody else's feelings as well, you know. So I understand that this is just the reaction of the people to not like being around, or think that being around an atheist would be bad, and it's totally like a prejudice of the title, you know. Because what I've normally also encountered and have experienced were a lot of other people in a bigger I used to work in two bases of SAMU, so in the central and in the uncentralized base. So in the bigger center, in the central base, people that would not really know that I'm an atheist and just see me in between other people would later come and say like, I can't believe you're an atheist. Everybody loves you and you're so nice. How come?
Yeah, like you can't be an atheist and be nice too. That's what gets me.
Which I think is all the more important for, you know, being an out atheist. And I really respect that, the fact that, you know, you took that time to say, hey, you know what? This is my belief. This is who I am. deal with it to an extent. And then, you know, right. people can look at you and be like, mm-hmm. hey, that's a cool person. And that yeah. person, an atheist, well, maybe that changes my perspective a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's very brave to do that.
It's interesting because other people saw me suffering this on the groups and in the personal, you know, in the environment at work. Mm-hmm. And some people came to me and said, like, you see why I cannot come out of the closet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, for
confessions of like, I'm not gonna do that. Same, I'm not strong as you know, like to tell my mom and my family and my colleagues that I don't believe God. It's better I just, you know, don't talk about it.
Sometimes yeah. it takes something really extraordinary just to be able to admit that you are an atheist to other people. I know Larry has a similar example of like an extraordinary yeah. event. You mind talking about that?
Well, which one are you talking about?
9/11.
Oh yeah, thing that it is. I give you kudos for coming out to your families, both of you, because my dad died after I'd been an atheist for maybe 6 years.
Yeah.
And I was in the closet all that time.
Right.
But my mom didn't die till like 2000 or 1999. So I was 30 years in the atheist closet, not telling anybody.
Wow.
But of course, it's different now. There are an awful lot of atheism out there now. There's it's in the discussions that you see anywhere on the internet. People will talk about there being atheists and stuff. But it just didn't happen that much before the turn of this century.
Hmm.
Yeah. But I did finally come out when three things conspired in the same year. 9/11 happened,
yeah.
you know, religious people coming to our country and directly attacking us. And then, of course, our response was religious in nature.
Yep.
The other thing was George W. Bush started a faith-based initiatives to take my tax dollars and give them directly to religious organizations, which is a constitutional no-no. It's right. against the Constitution, and it's still going on.
Mm.
It was an executive order that could have been canceled by Obama, but he didn't do it in 8 years of office.
Mm-hmm.
And the third thing that happened during that particular year was I read a book by Carl Sagan called Demon Haunted World. In other words, if you're a religious person, you believe in demons, you live in a world that is demon haunted. And it's hard for us secular people to consider that and believe it. But this book really brought it out, and it brought out not only religious problems, but problems of superstition and numerology and horoscopes and witches and belief in magic. All of that happened during the same year. I think it was 2000, 2001. Well, I guess it was 2001 because of 9/11. And after that, I could no longer be silent. So I started speaking out, and I started the Atheist Society of Knoxville. I was already in a group called Rationalists of East Tennessee, and they're still going strong here in Knoxville. But they wouldn't use the A word. They wouldn't use the word atheist. You know, they were just rationalists, and not all of them were atheists, was the argument that they would give me. So
I decided
to start a group on my own and call it Atheists.
But Larry, I know you said this, but after 30 years mm-hmm. in the closet with the atheist label, and you know there's a group that is afraid to use, or not necessarily afraid, but just is wary of using the atheist label itself.
Uh-huh.
Is there any understanding on your part of why they would be so hesitant? And also, like, isn't that a trauma in its own self? You're keeping mm-hmm. this huge revelation to yourself
right.
that even from your parents, even to the point where they go to their deathbeds, knowing, like, I can't tell you who I really am or what I've really known about
right.
the world.
Right. The thing that is, the word atheist is a perfectly valid word. Mm-hmm. It's descriptive of exactly what it means.
Yeah.
And it's honorable. There are many very smart people down through history who were atheists.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One of the first person to ever be put to death for atheism was Socrates. You know, and the only reason we don't use it is because of all the negativity that the religious people have put on it over the ages.
Right.
And I'm not going to shy away from using the word simply because it would offend the very people who put all that baggage on it in the first place.
But why 30 years in? Why? What was the hesitancy?
Working in public jobs. I was self-employed for half of that time, and I was afraid what it would do to my business. And I finally just got, you know, to the point where I couldn't be silent anymore, and I finally came out. And you were talking about, you know, people, you tell that you're atheist and they come back on you. The very first person I came out to was I was doing a lot of dancing then, and she was kind
what,
of a
dancing?
Dance partner. Yeah.
Every time I ask about Larry's back life, I learn some brand new thing. One new thing each time.
I danced on TV for 5 years.
What style? You never told me about
this. Oh, it was
kind
of country western dance.
Okay, so like line up, do-si-do.
Well, there was some line dancing, but there was swing and two-step and cha-cha and polka and all kinds of different dances.
That's popular in Brazil, too. Fanny, you can get on this.
But the first person I ever told that I was atheist, you know, when I told her that, she said in this beautiful southern drawl, "Oh, no, you're not. You're too nice." Like, you can't be atheist and nice. It just, it's part of the baggage that religious people have put on, you know, the word atheist.
So I was on a date with a girl from India, and she was under the assumption that I was a Christian because she was, like, saying things. We're choosing things to eat, and I didn't want to get anything to offend her. And she's just like, "I know Christians can eat anything." I was like, "Oh, I don't worship any Christian gods." And then she looked at me really weird. She's just like, "So which god do you worship?" Because she was like, "I have no idea then what you are." And I said, "I don't worship any gods." And she looked at me for like a solid, like, you know, three seconds. And then she's like, "That's fantastic." And then we ended up eating a pork
right there.
Because she didn't take it seriously, too. So I was just like, "That's so great." I mean, it took such a pressure off both of us. And she was great. So, yeah, everything was great.
Very good. That's the last response that I would have expected you to come up with. But what's funny was, not only do other Christians, or I mean Christians, assume that you're a Christian if you don't come out of the closet, but heck, your atheist friends assume you're Christian.
If
they don't come out of the closet and you don't come out of the closet, you just assume everybody around you is Christian.
You perpetuate that own cycle of trauma of people staying closed. But yeah, go on ahead, Fanny.
I think the answer for your question is why we come out, why we sometimes take so long to come out of the closet as an atheist, is because the thing we exposed early is like, it still has so much bigotry and prejudice against
it. Does it really does,
or no religious, and the title itself, it has been very misunderstood recently with all the postmodernists that enter the title as atheist, agnostic, because they just believe the religious structured religious exists, but then they believe in some type of subjective that everything is possible, and they are called atheists as well, just because they do not believe any god, but then they can believe fairies, gnomes, and other things, and they still atheists by the title and the meaning of the word atheist. So there is a big discussion around this. I think a lot of people refuse the title atheist to not be related to this, all this postmodernist it's really difficult. It's the thing about you can't hurt cats, is the joke about the atheist. The point of a call that I use the title and I want to speak out as an atheist is following Hitchens, and like I cannot take any more of this show, and I need to speak out. Because I have the rest of the eternity after I die to be quiet, you know? And so people keep calling me and say like, "Hey, shut up, stop talking about those things." And it's like, no, I really need to talk about this. It's really important, not just for me. I'm free from it, but I want other people to be able to get free from, you know, superstitions and silly beliefs and faith. It's not a good method to arrive in any conclusion.
Yeah. No, I believe that they have every right to believe whatever they want to, but they should not be able to indoctrinate their children until a certain age in that type of thing, so they have the, at least the mental facilities to be able to question what they're being told. And they should not try to legislate their beliefs onto other people to make them live under the strictures of their religion.
Right. You know, so my degree is in biochemistry. I got a PhD in it from Georgia Tech. When I've been on, there's like an internal bus called the trolley that takes you from building to building. I've been on that trolley and I've seen like young black women in my field. Brilliant, brilliant, because we have so few women and it's so few women of color that are in like these STEM fields that we're in. And I saw them having conversations with other people being like, yeah, I'm in these biochemistry class, but I find like it's really challenging my religious beliefs and I don't like that. I think I'm going to drop out and do something else. And I'm like, oh, I wish that wasn't the case. I wish it would be more of like, at least compartmentalize it for now, embrace that cognitive dissonance and stay in the field. But don't leave because you feel like your ideas are being challenged. That's what college is for. That's what you go to university for.
Right.
And it's a shame because I in that moment, I let that conversation happen without stepping in because I didn't really know those people well. Like, I knew them from class, but like I didn't want to like butt in particularly on such like on a trip where I knew I had to leave in like 7 minutes or something like that. But if I knew what I did now, I would say like, hey, let's take some time and talk about this because maybe we could find a way for you to still stay in, or maybe we can have a conversation about your beliefs and maybe why you're here in the first place. And we can find maybe something more aspiring to believe while you're here, or something more intellectually honest.
Yeah.
But yes, I just hangovers and regrets. I get them a lot. And I feel like it's not healthy for me to spin my own wheel in this way. I have to realize that, you know, Christianity is probably going to be around even after I die. And there are going to be people who are going to want more comfortable lies than, you know, uncomfortable truths. And because of that, I can't be responsible for changing every single person's mind, but I can own my own intellectual honesty and I can find comfort in that. And I think that has to outweigh the mischances, the fact that I'm stable, secure, and willing to know true things. And that open-mindedness keeps me cemented towards a healthy lifestyle compared to hoping for what could have been or what should have changed in the past.
True.
One thing that I think it kind of links everything on my, at least on my personal experience, is like I still have, like you told, your family is very multi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a sister that's a Muslim.
It happens the same. Like I really understand what you mean, and it happens the same. Like I told, my father came from a Buddhist family that became Christian, and my mom came from a Catholic family, and she became less religious for some time. And then later, my brother that has passed through some periods calling himself agnostic atheist became hardcore evangelical and turned my mom in evangelical as well. And she's still like jumping from Catholic and evangelical church and really not follow any of them, but really believes that it's very important to have some type of spirituality. My sister is pretty much an atheist in religiosity, but meditates and reads a lot about different books in all the ways possible. And I'm an atheist, and I still deal with family issues because of, like, my brother doesn't talk to me the last 2 or 3 weeks. Wow. And it has been his birthday last week, and I did not send him happy birthday because he told me specific that my opinions do not matter to him. So it's really hard to see people dismissing real people, family, people that you love, because of supernatural, imaginary beings.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that is another reason that I speak up, because my case is like, we're all good, you know, it's just some face, and everything's going to be fine in some time. But there are people that are really pushed away completely and become completely alone, kicked out of their families because of other things related to religious.
Or give up on having friendships or relationships just because they feel like no one believes what they believe, you know? Yeah, no. I get it.
So, yeah, I think it's important to everybody talk about this, because the reality is more important to whatever supernatural, superstition, imaginary deity or being, you know. And I think we need to bring these people back to to Earth.
Yeah. We got to bring them back.
I agree. And I think that one of the most important things we can do is leave something for posterity.
Yeah.
Write something down, make a video, do some recordings, you know, do straight epistemology or whatever.
Write a book.
We need to be able to give back to the society, and especially the reality society, just for the people, the generations that are going to come after us.
Right.
The ones that are, especially the ones that are born into religion.
And give them a chance to get to where we're at now. Yeah. Or even better.
And it's interesting because just yesterday I saw in the street epistemology group was exactly talking about this, you know, the indoctrination. And I was mentioning that even atheists, or, you know, most of atheists still believe in some type of karma or whatever belief, supernatural belief, you still kind of indoctrinate a little bit their kids into their beliefs.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I think there is an objective position if you really want to present your kid the reality, would be like present reality and the senses and the tools, logic and reason, to later your kid, and of course show your kids all the beliefs and show them all these myths, you know, gnomes and fairies and gods and angels, and explain. There are people that believe on those things. And then later, with all of these things together, they can make their own decisions. It's what I plan to do with my kids. And I will let them choose if later in life they want to be evangelicals or Buddhists or believe in other crazy stuff. I think I will be... I'll be like with my mind or my conscience, I will be clean in my conscience that I gave them the tools for them to make the best decisions in their lives.
Nice. So we're at the bottom of the hour. Let's take a break and come back on this. I think we're having a really great talk. More after the break. We're going to play some music. We're going to play Big Butter Jesus. It's a big favorite here at the show. And we'll see. This is 103.9 Wozo, Kentucky. Or Knoxville.
Knoxville, Tennessee.
Knoxville, Tennessee. I get confused. I moved around a lot.
All right, 103.9 LPFM.
In southern Ohio, just north of Cincinnati, I beheld a vision next to the expressway. Was a 60-foot Jesus with his hands in the air. Looked like he's carved out of butter, just like at the state fair. Big butter Jesus, sweet cream Jesus, old country fresh Jesus, unsalted Jesus, old promise Jesus, imperial Jesus, can't believe it's not Jesus, holy, oh Lord. Well, you see him from the chest up, like he's about to do a backflip, like he scored a touchdown, or maybe melting or about to drown. Well, I've been to the state fair, seen a cow made out of corn cobs, Garth Brooks out of string cheese, and the Virgin out of olives. Big butter Jesus, sweet cream Jesus, old country fresh Jesus, unsalted Jesus, old promise Jesus, imperial Jesus, can't believe it's not Jesus, holy, oh Lord. Shipped in pieces on a flatbed, staring backwards was his big head. Driver stuck in traffic backups, desperately avoiding eye contact. Well, don't make no graven images, that's one of the Ten Commandments. I hope the grading curve is kindly, you get to heaven with a 90.
Big Butter Jesus, sweet cream Jesus, old country fresh Jesus, unsalted Jesus, old promise Jesus, imperial Jesus, can't believe it's not Jesus, holy old Lord. Believe it's not Jesus. Oh, spread the word.
One, two, 3, 4.
Down by the Everglades, past dried up riverbeds full of clay, under one lonely grave, that's where my father lays. He was my rocket man, as sweet as the songs we sang, he was my Superman. But it was time to fly away, yeah, yeah. And I need a superhero, yeah. Do I have to shout? I need someone beside me to hear me out, then lie to me, yeah. I need a superhero to tell me how I'm supposed to be. All right, all right. Tell me how I'm supposed to be, yeah. Okay, tell me how I'm supposed to be.
That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Five, and this is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today's July 28th, and if it's not, you're listening to a rebroadcast of the show, or you should not be trying to call in. But first, let's talk about the free thought groups that you can join right here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. We're in our 16th, actually 17th year now. ASK has over 950 members, and you can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org. Also, you can join ASK in person in our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria in the Old City, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everyone is welcome as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one, start one. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee, and they've been around for more than 20 years. RET has bi-weekly presentations and discussions in the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sunday at the Goins Administration Building. But if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. Then there is the Sunday Assembly, which started in England just a couple of years ago and has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in gods, but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. They only meet once a month, though. It's on the fourth Sunday down at the World's Fair site in the International Building. Then there's a Secular Student Alliance, which school coming back in the fall. They will be there to give programs, to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement, or would just like to find other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. And early in the show, we also talked about Knoxville's Atheist Call-In TV show. Some of us have actually seen it. I'm not going to name a co-host by name, but it's called Free Thought Forum. And we can see it. You can see it every Wednesday night between 6:30 and 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archives of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been recording and posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved in the TV or the radio show, just come to an ASK meetup. That's ASK, Atheist Society of Knoxville, or a Rationalist of East Tennessee meeting and talk to us about it. You can be our next co-host or guest. And back to you, Wombat. Back to the show.
Perfect timing. So we I think we hit the nail on the head with regard to traumatic experiences from family, friends, environments as we leave religion. But one of the questions we keep getting is, hey, if you left a religion, where do you get your morals from?
The old saw, the old horse.
And here's the thing.
Everybody likes to saddle that up and ride it for a while.
Larry, you and I have beat this bush before many, many times, but we have a new guest on the show, and I wanted to know, hey, Fanny, now that you're not religious anymore, where do you get your morals from? How can you possibly be moral?
Well, yeah, that is an interesting question, because the ones that have not encountered atheists, they don't think they would keep their values or morals. You know, they really encounter religion and or see religion as that thing that, or you're going to be good for heaven, for some prize to get into heaven, or because you're really afraid of hell, you know, the punishment. And when I see that type of behavior, I see like this is not being really good. That you're being good because, you know, of fear or for a prize. So I personally came from a religious family, but they use, like we talked the other time, a very secular way to talk how to be good to others, and was like, just don't do to others what you would not like them to treat you. Huh? No, like, don't do bad things to people, and people will not be bad to you. So it's very secular, and it's I argued with time and through messages about how this would be a selfish position. And in fact, it is a selfish position, but it is the best, I would say.
Hmm. Okay. And if you had to summarize that in, like, I don't know, like one parable or one morale, how would you do it?
Oh, I think it's pretty much what I said before. Don't behave towards other people in a way that you would not like to be treated.
Don't behave in ways.
Yeah, it's kind of a negative expression of what Jesus said. But I think it's even more apt. And Confucius said that 500 years before Jesus came out with his thing. Confucius says, don't do unto others what you wouldn't have them do unto you.
It's basically, don't be a jerk.
Yeah.
Don't be a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, which I think it's a great principle. I like the idea of not being a jerk being like a really strong guiding principle for like how to interact with other people, because you shouldn't have to be nice. And this is going to sound a little weird, but like there should be no obligation on your part to do good things to other people. Like if you do it and it's good, then that isn't something you should be obligated to do. It should just be something that is good for the sake of being good. And it's
right.
like, hey.
But the thing about it is, a Christian would come right back to you and say, yeah, do it because it's good. And whatever God says is good. So you have to get back to what is good.
Oh, that's great. And so, yeah. And not only that, but like the whole charistic of Christianity is you do it because it's good so you can go to heaven and be away from hell and God's, you know, wrath. So there's a lot more to it as well.
Yeah,
but
right.
as far as like a rule.
The thing about it is, I can, you know, all these.
Just finishing yeah. the point. But as far yeah. as like, don't be a jerk. That in its own right has no, like, you are obligated to not be a jerk. Like, that is something you are obligated to do. And I think that it outlines conduct a lot better than outlining a list of good things. Just say, hey, here are the things that we don't tolerate. Don't do these things. And everything else is all right. You can discover it on your own. But if it betrays these things that we agree we don't want to be treated as, then don't do them. But other than that, you have all complete freedom. And I think that's probably the better way of setting up a system of conduct.
Well, I think that the core of the system means it should be don't harm your fellow man.
Don't needlessly harm your fellow man.
Yeah. Don't harden them psychologically, physically, financially, morally. Don't harm them
needlessly.
Unless it's absolutely necessary for the greater good. Let's say, you know, the old Christian, the first thing they go to, thou shalt not kill. Well, that we don't kill each other. Unless we have to go to war, and then as a society we sign off on it. Yeah, go ahead and kill. You know, it's because we're trying to protect a bigger society or a better goal for our society. But harm is the golden goalpost, you know, to measure your actions against, and then whether or not, like, it's a bad thing to tell a lie unless you're trying to protect someone. Let's say that you're a Christian living in Germany and you've got a friend who's a Jew and you're hiding him in the basement, and the brown shirts come to your door and ask you if you know where any Jews are, and you tell them no in order to protect that person from harm. You know, that kind of thing. Morals are situational. Morals are not just following rules.
But I think there is an objective way to find that out, like you said before. And I think there is a funny way that George Carlin, there is some shows of him talking about morality and religion. And I think he points that very well, like saying, like, just don't harm in any way. Don't harm physically or financially, you know. So he displays those situations, and I think it's pretty much objective. It's like, yeah, okay, so yes, when you try to put yourself, empathize about the situation, you can objectively find if the situation, what is, would be the good and bad outcome, and find out what it would be the best action to take, you know, objectively speaking. I think and in the end, I think it's like you said, don't be a jerk and be good to people for no reason.
Try to be good with, well, I can throw out two things in an effort to just help tweaks Larry's point of view, and then to also make it more objective. Harm sometimes is necessary. Sometimes harm is consensual. Sometimes harm is for science. But what we objectively don't want is needless harm. That's just harm where there's no one benefiting on either side, where it just is harm for the sake of harm. Like, that seems to be fairly needless.
I like your argument. I think you should use that for talking to vegans when they talk about killing animals. It's like, no, we don't kill animals for fun, you know?
Right. Or
we do it for a purpose, and that is what makes it moral.
And if lettuce could say something, they probably wouldn't want to be made into salads either, right? But I would also say, like, when we measure, like, morality, when we compare different systems, we tend to do it based on needless harm, like how much needless harm is being generated. And the ones that cause way more tends to be the ones that we rank way lower.
Or harm does done for bad reasons, like out of greed, you know, financial harm done for greed, or for you know, just personal reasons that do not benefit society.
Sure, I no doubt there's bad forms of harm, but we can objectively say that needless harm is like one of the useless
sure
aspects, and that's mm-hmm. and that's an objective measuring stick that we can use for everything else. Also, I don't like the idea of you have to be nice. I do like the idea of don't be mean, because if I have to get out of my bed and help people as like part of the thing that I'm obligated to do to society, that seems like a drain on me. And plus, all the good things I'm doing to society, I'm just doing it to meet the obligation. But if mm-hmm. I'm told not to be a jerk, I'm going to go outside, I'm going to live the life I want. But as long as I'm not a jerk to anybody and no one's a jerk to me, that seems like uh-huh. the ideal situation. Because now if anyone does do something good for me, they did that without being forced to or without any sort of obligation. I'm like, wow, that means a lot to me. You helped me move from one place to another. Thank you, man. Can I do something nice to you to repay that? It's like, yeah, you're not, you don't have to. You're not obligated to. I'm like, man, that's a cool guy. He helped me out. I'm still going to help him out anyway, even though I'm not obligated to help him out because he already told me I wasn't. I'm still going to give yeah. him like a pizza or something like that. And yep. that's a great world yep. to be in, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but a lot of times Christians will tell me, you know, they get their morals from the Bible. Hmm. And I say, no, you generally get them from society. It's agreed upon in our society what we will or will not put up with.
Right.
No, but I get my morals from the Bible. No, if they did, they would follow all the rules in the Bible, all 613 rules about not wearing mixed fibers and killing homosexuality, killing homosexuals, mm-hmm. and searching out and killing witches and just all of the various brutal rules in the Bible. But what do they follow? 10 rules, four of which have to do with which God you follow.
Yeah.
And they consider that following 6 rules to be moral, and that's all they need. But
yeah, and the thing is, morality isn't a list of rules. It's a system that needs to inform itself and change as people become more complex and you get more information about how to treat each other. It's like if I showed you a book, like a mathematics times table, I'm like, this is mathematics. This is all there is to mathematics. I'm like, no, there's like division. There's calculus. Uh-huh. There's like algebra, uh-huh. geometry. You just have mm-hmm. list of 10 different questions and answers on this multiplication table. There's way more to it than this. And they're like, mm-hmm. no, this is my morality. It's a book. It's like, no, mm-hmm. no. You can't just put all morality in a book. It's a living system. You need to talk to mm-hmm. people to understand how they want to be treated and how you yeah. should treat them. And yeah. only through that, through this discourse that we can have and learning other people's systems and informing ourselves what we can do to improve mm-hmm. each other's treatment and forms of conduct in society, can we get better at treating each other like people? That's the basis to it. It's not easy. No, like the comfortable lie is, no, just read this book and you're good to go. Read this book, not only are you good to go, but you're going to enjoy heaven for the rest of eternity. But the hard truth is, no, you're going to have to struggle for a while and be a lot of trial and error. But if we start this now, we can help the next generation get here faster and then hopefully improve even more than that. So that's the goal. That's the goal.
Yep.
I do have a, so we have 8 minutes left in the show. I have a maybe controversial position. I think selfishness is the root of morality. You've heard perhaps like the Dillahunty expression that like well-being is an important facet for measuring morality. Like we come up with things that we value, like being alive compared to being
sure.
dead,
yeah.
not and having everything stolen.
Society.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. benefits us. And we right. tend to do things that benefit us. The things that don't benefit us either tend to be non-moral questions or amoral actions. Like if I choose to speed in my car, I'm doing something that's not to my benefit. I might get arrested. I might get a ticket. And I might have to have my license revoked. And that affects my ability to go to work and have the convenience of like getting groceries, et cetera, on my own. That doesn't yeah. benefit me. So it behooves me to follow like the standard rules of driving. That way my car and my insurance and all that stuff stay in line. That serves my well-being, but it ultimately benefits me. And behaving in ways that benefit me is behaving selfishly. I don't think selfishness is inherently a bad thing. I think it gets connotized. Oh, I'll let you guys jump in if you'd like to. Go for it.
I love the discussion, because just after we talked and I told you some situation happened around here, and I was really thinking about the selfishness and positions people that position themselves against objectivism is specifically because they don't believe being selfish is a good thing.
Hmm. It's true.
And I'm going to tell you that I was stretching my thoughts on being selfish and being good. How can we be selfish like that, believe those things, and still be good?
Yeah.
And there is an explanation. There are like maybe two hypotheses at least that I would present as the strongest ones, and would be like, first, because we got that was a trait that we got evolutionarily as being selfish to our species, and that's why we naturally help each other. And second, because that is chemically is explained, we release endorphins, like the pleasure endorphins, when we're good to other people as well. So, and that is a feeling that we like to do.
It's very true. It's very true.
You know?
We get a little chemical high whenever we help each other, or whenever our bodies are like, hey, we should keep doing this because it benefits us in the long term. If we live in a society where everyone helps each other, and that ultimately benefits you, it's okay to be selfish. You can
just to finish my thoughts and to present, because I did not explain, we were talking about being selfish and how and just focusing in the conversation how selfishness is good for us to make the best conclusions or to make the best choices, you know. And then I was just looking at my husband leaving the house, and I saw this guy homeless across the street catching cans from the garbage to probably sell and make some money. And I normally have all the clothes that I give to secondhand stores, normally the religious stores by the corner. And I know they sell those things. And I normally feel like I should give this straight to people, not giving the charity straight to the people on the streets that need. And I called the guy, and I offered him, and I gave him a pair of pants, clothes, and jackets, shirts. And you know that thing, and that is what I wanted to tell people, because people think like, oh, if you are an atheist, you do not empathize with people, and you do not have... No, because we are all people.
Right.
And we do know what is being hungry or being cold, and it doesn't depend on religiosity for us to empathize to other people and be nice and be good and also have this feeling, you know, because it's good. Do it and you're gonna feel, and that is not Holy Spirit, and that is basically just you being good to other people. You feel good, and that's natural, you know. It's something that I wanted to put here and to make people see that as something natural. It's nothing that we're trying to indoctrinate them to be an atheist free from religion, and you naturally can be good.
Very good. As we head towards the last couple minutes of the show, Larry, do you want to close up?
I have a little something.
Yeah.
I'm going back to morality and the Ten Commandments and all that. There's a saying, if all you have is a hammer, all your problems start to look like nails.
It's true.
Life is much more complex and nuanced than that. If all you have is Ten Commandments, you start to look at all of your problems in those terms. Mm. For instance, abortion isn't just about thou shalt not kill. It's about the health of the mother, the quality of the life of the child, etc. You know, you can't just, you know, take all of life's problems and break them down into six rules and say this applies to that.
Yeah,
it's a lot more complicated than that.
Life is complicated.
And I would also like to say, don't worry about heaven or hell. Everybody's going to somebody else's hell. I had to get that in.
Go for it. So I guess that ends the show. Hey, Fanny, last words.
Oh, guys, thank you very much. I love the conversations, and I hope I can enjoy you more times and share you with Brazilians.
Absolutely. You're always invited.
Happy to have you.
And I'll say, hey, check out Amazon The Boys. It's really good. I really enjoyed it. It was really fun. But not for your families. Not for your families. But, yeah, it's a really good show.
It's true.
Okay, this is WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM. Thanks for joining us. We'll be here next Wednesday at 7 o'clock.
Nice.
Let it go, God. Let it go, God. 103.9 FM, Knoxville.
Thank you for having me.